turn to Psalm 3 because I want to show you the remarkable prayer that David prays. Look at this. Back to my drawing. David, just to give you the backdrop, David, his son Absalom, runs him out of town, Jerusalem, the city of David. David crosses the Kidron Valley. We already saw in 2 Samuel 15, he's barefooted. He has his head covered. He's looking down. He is audibly weeping and wailing and walking barefooted across this rocky valley, the Kidron Valley ravine and the brook, up the Mount of Olives. And it says when he gets to the top, 2 Samuel 15:32 says he worshiped. He stops and worships. Now, who in your Bible, which one of you in Psalm 3 has the superscript? Okay, any of my front row? Why do none of my front row people have a superscript? You don't have one? Oh,
I guess I volunteer.
St. Joseph is going to read to us the context of everything for the next hour. If you only listen to Joseph, you've got everything. Okay?
A Psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son.
And do you know what I wrote? Can you see what I wrote right there?
Second. 2 Samuel 15:13-32.
Forever, whenever you read the third Psalm, you must think about 2 Samuel 15:13-32. That is the context for Psalm 3. Now remember, the most important part of understanding the Bible is the context. And the context of Psalm 3 is 2 Samuel 15:13-32. And what it's all about is, I'll tell you ahead of time, David is running for his life, actually walking for his life, barefooted, crying, covered head, weeping, all the people around him are wailing, and a whole army is coming to get him, and he's camping outdoors. Now, at least in this room, we have windows, you know, and there are walls, and we have a roof. And so most, if we were being followed by an army, most of their arrows wouldn't make it in here. They would hit the windows and break the windows, and they'd hit the door, and their slingshots would do that. Their spears, we'd be able to, you know, none of them could get me if I got right here, you know. They would be, you know, shooting by me. David is going to camp outdoors, and we know back then they slept on the ground. Now, do you think you could fall asleep if an entire army had swept down through your hometown and you were out here sleeping on the ground? Did you know I had trouble sleeping during the typhoon? It was so loud in our room. Was it loud in your room? It wasn't loud. It was loud in our room. I mean, it sounded like we were on a jet. It's the very same sound as flying. That wind by you. And so I kept waiting for the jet to land. And it just got louder and louder and louder. It just kept going up. And it didn't go down until it was over. David is going to sleep. Look what it says in Psalm 3. Verse 5, I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not, verse 6, be afraid of 10,000 people that are coming to get me. Do you see how beautiful this psalm is? Now, what are we looking at as far as in our studies? Well, this is our 17th hour together. And what we see is the peace that God gives His servants, which I call sleeping grace. Did you know there are many people that can't sleep? Now, some people can't sleep because they have sickness, you know, and there are things wrong with them. But that's only a few people. You know what most people can't sleep because of? Anxiety. They are so concerned about everything. They're afraid for their safety. They're afraid for the future. They're afraid for all of their family members. They're afraid for their job. They're afraid for their health. They're anxious. Now, most of us, do you all know the English word worry? How many of you could define that for me? You know what worrying is? Do you understand the word worry? Yes or no? Okay. Worrying actually is the negative side of meditation. See, meditation, if you are negative, you worry. Meditation means you think about something all the time. You meditate. Some of you are meditating on your verses for that verse test last night. You were thinking about them over and over again. I watched you. You had your little cards, you had your notebooks, you were looking at your verses. So the negative side of meditation is worry. The positive side of meditation is this: you're able to transform your mind and renew your mind. That's the positive use of meditation is transformational. Your mind changes, you have peace and joy. The negative side is it's worrying about problems. That's negative. Thinking about promises, meditating about promises transforms us. So that's the positive use of meditation. The negative use of meditation is worry, thinking about problems. So which did David do? Psalm 3 is all about David meditating not on the army coming, his son killing him, and all of his problems, but meditating on all of God's promises. The God said, I will never leave you, I'll never forsake you, I chose you. Psalm 139, I designed you in your mother's womb, I fearfully and wonderfully made you. That's sleeping grace. And it's sleeping when fears surround us. Okay, let's go through every part of Psalm 3. And by the way, now I'm going to have to help you. Today, this lesson, lesson 17, you're going to use both the notes from 17 and 18. Next hour from 18, you're going to use the notes that are numbered 19. And tomorrow, when you get to class 19, you're going to use the notes for 20. Now someone's going to ask me, where are the notes for class 20 then, if we've already used them up in class 19? There aren't any. So you just have to just sit here and listen with no notes. Okay, sorry. What happened is, as I was working along last night, I said to my wife, I said, there's one missing. And so we'll just go without it, okay? Can you guys go without anything to look at in your notebooks? You can just look at the Bible. Won't that be fun? And it'll be great. Okay, so today you're doing the notes from two of them. Okay, Psalms are from God. Listen, Psalms are from God. Every one of the 150 Psalms, God sent them to you and to me. All of them are important. The third Psalm is the opener of some of the marvelous things. A psalm is a worship song. It's a truth offered to God in worship that is to be shared by participation. That's what psalms are. They were participatory. They were group songs that the nation of Israel sang together. Isn't that neat? Kind of like last night while I was working on this, I can hear everything going on here in our room. Our room is right there. Probably you can hear it in your room. And so I was listening to you. Bonnie was sitting and enjoying and filming and taking pictures of you all. And some of you were doing special music. And Gaius was leading. And MVP was preaching. But did you notice that the songs you sang were group songs? And you guys really sing. You really know those songs. That's what the book of Psalms is. They were group. And God invites us to join in and participate in praising for what he's done. Okay, so look at Psalm 3. What Joseph read to us, the first thing it says in the Hebrew Bible is a psalm. So if Joseph looked in his Bible, that's the first one that's called the psalm. It doesn't say that before number 2, and it doesn't say that before number 1. We call them psalms, but that was put in by a printer in the 15th and 16th century AD. This is the first one God calls a psalm. The third. It's the first one that's called a psalm. Now, they're all psalms, but for some reason, God wanted to emphasize this one. The second thing is, it says a psalm of what, Joseph? This is the first psalm in the whole book of Psalms attributed to David. Now, did David write psalms that aren't attributed to him? Yes. But 73 have this attribution in them. Isn't that interesting? Now, you say, what are you making such a big deal about this for? I'm not. God did. It's God that chose to say that Psalm 3 was a psalm, and he didn't say that about any other psalm before this. God chose to say it's a psalm of David. Okay. Here's the third thing. This is the first psalm that gives us the divinely written setting. The context. This, right here, this map I've been working on for 2 hours, this is what's written about. It says, a psalm of David, look at this, when he fled from Absalom, his son. That's exactly what's going on here. Absalom is coming to get David. David is driven out across the brook Kidron. David walks up the Mount of Olives, and in 2 Samuel 15, 30 to 32, it says he pauses at the top of the Mount of Olives to worship God. And this psalm is that worship. It's amazing. But there's one more thing about it. All of you have this. Everybody look down at Psalm 3. What is at the end of verse 2? What's the last word in your Bible? Say it out loud. Ah. What's at the end of verse 4? Everybody say it out loud. Whoa. What's at the end of verse 8? This is the first psalm that has those in it. Those Selahs. Those Selahs basically mean, what do you think of that? Look at that. Did you think about that? See, it's kind of like, I would say, did you think about how big this is? That's what a Selah is. I just drew attention to how big this water container is. Whenever you see Selah written in your Bible, stop. Because God is asking you to stop, pause, and think about what he just said. And so there are three messages in the psalm. We're going to look at them. But they're chosen by God. Verse 1 and 2 is the first message. Verse 3 and 4 is the second message. And verse 5, 6, 7, and 8 is the third message. It's a three-point sermon from God. By the way, Selahs, there are a lot of them. There are 16 psalms that only have one Selah in them. There are 15 psalms that have two Selahs in them. There are 7 psalms that have 3 in them. This is one of them. One of 7 that has Selah, Selah, Selah. But there's only one psalm that has 4. Selah, 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 Selah. Psalm 89. And we've already covered that because it talks about David being king and Messiah and the Lord's plan. So it's amazing, this psalm. What else can we find out? Well, look at 2 Samuel 15. And let's once again remember the setting. 2 Samuel 15 and verse 13 says this. The bad news comes to David in verse 13. A messenger came to David in 2 Samuel 15:13 and said, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." David knew in chapter 12 the sword would not depart from his family and that God was going to send adversity. He knew it. His first son died. He knew it. There's this whole problem with Ammon and Tamar. And now, Absalom. See, David knew that trouble was coming. And when David knew that trouble was coming, it meant God was going to dip his life in hot water. Trouble, pain, problems. Do you know what most of us do? We see a problem coming, we run away from it. We hide from it. We ignore it. Did you know problems, adversity, struggles, difficulties are sent from God to show what's inside of us? That's how God reveals what's inside of us. And whether we meditate on the problem, that's worry, that's a sin. Jesus said, "Do not be anxious. Do not worry." Jesus commands us not to do that. He said, use your meditator not on your problems, but as soon as a problem comes your way, you don't ignore it. You start meditating on every promise of God that's connected to that problem. Is that how you look at the Bible? Look at the Bible as, when you're reading it, as finding every promise God gives for all the problems of life. And David's life is the most written about life in the Bible. All of his problems are written about with a promise attached to them so that we have a plan what to meditate on so that we don't worry about our problems. So David's memories, think about what David was thinking about. David remembered how he rescued his own son Absalom so many times. Absalom's been with David for a long time. Absalom is a grown man now. And David had had him for 30 plus years. David had rescued young Absalom from Saul's hand. Do you remember when David took his family to Moab? Remember, I went right like this and I said, look at what David did. He took his family up to Moab and left them with the king of Moab so that Saul wouldn't capture his family, kill his family, or anything. Little Absalom was in that group. David remembered that. Later, David had risked his life to attack the raiding bands from the city of Ziklag. Absalom had been dragged off by the raiding bands when Ziklag was captured and burned, way back when David was up there with the Philistines. David immediately started thinking, how many times have I rescued Absalom? I rescued him from Saul. I rescued him from the raiding bands. I'm the one that protected him. I fed him. I provided for him. I gave him a home. In his thoughts also went to the fact, look at verse 13. It says, the hearts of the people, 2 Samuel 15:13, are with Absalom. Do you know what else really hurt? Not only did David rescue Absalom so many times, the whole nation of Israel would have been decimated by the Philistines. They would have run up every valley and they would have knocked out. I mean, when the Philistines came, they took everything. They raped the women. They killed the men. They took everything they had. You know what David could have said? Your heart is with Absalom. Absalom's never saved you from anyone. I'm the one that rescued you from the Ammonites, from the Moabites, from the Edomites, from the Philistines, from the Amalekites. I'm the one that kept you from the Syrians. Do you see? If David would have meditated on all those awful things, all it would have done is made him anxious, fearful, and bitter. Now, let's think about what's going on. Look at verse 14. Okay, you're in 2 Samuel 15. Look at verse 14. As soon as the bad news came, Absalom that you rescued is coming to kill you, and the people that you rescued don't love you anymore, they love him. That's the problem. Now, what is David's response? Verse 14. So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us, and strike the city with the edge of the sword." Do you notice all the things David's concerned about? This is the city of God, the city God chose for his name. This is the place where the tabernacle, the ark, the priests, God's name. This is on Mount Moriah, where right up here on Mount Moriah, Jesus is going to be crucified right there. This is where Abraham offered Isaac right there. This is where the temple is going to be. David only thought about two things: protect the city, protect the family. You know what he could have said? "I'm getting out of here. I'm saving myself." He said, "Let's protect the city. Let's protect the family." See, David thought reasonably. And so he's at his lowest moment. Now let's look at what God does. Number one, God does eight things, and let's see if I can get through these all. When David was at the bottom, God sent him help. Now see, David, when he was looking at Bathsheba, God sent him help. But he resisted it. Do you remember the servants came and said, "That's Uriah's wife. That is Ahithophel's granddaughter. You shouldn't be doing this." God sent him help. God always sends us help. It says in 1 Corinthians 10:12-13, God is faithful. He never allows us to be tempted above what we're able. He's always there helping us. What help did God send? Look at verse 19. "Then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why are you also going with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner.'" Notice what it says in verse 19. Ittai the Gittite. What is a Gittite? Someone from the city of Gath. G-A-T-H. Someone from Goliath's hometown. Do you realize how amazing David is? Did you know that people, Philistines, from the city of Gath, from David's living there for a while, being Achish's bodyguard, they admired David, the king of their enemies, so much that they left their hometown and said, "For the rest of our life, we're going to follow and serve you, David." That's unheard of. So that guy from Gath, David says, "You are a foreigner." Look at verse 19. "You are an exile from your own place. You're from the Philistine territory. You don't need to come with me. In fact, you only came yesterday." David said, "You haven't been with me my whole life. You just came in that last part, the part where David is going up to the Philistine battle against Saul, and Achish sends him home. That was the only short time." And David says, "You don't need to come with me. Look what he says. Return and take your brethren back. Mercy and truth be with you." Verse 21. "But Ittai answered the king and said, 'As the Lord lives.'" Do you know what? Ittai had ended his worship of Dagon, the Philistine god, and had begun following the Lord. You know what we could say? David was a soul winner. Do you understand that? David influenced pagan Philistines to become followers of God. We influence pagan Filipinos and everybody else in this country to leave their false worship and follow God. Do you understand? David pointed people to the Lord. Here's some of his converts. Did you know there's only one thing you can take with you to heaven? What is that? People. There's only one thing you can take from this room to heaven with you. You certainly can't take your pen. You can't take all of your, you know, bags that you have, your books and in your watch, that beautiful watch. And you can't take your notebook. But you know what you can take to heaven? People. It's the only thing you can take with you. Do you know how you take them with you? You go and share the gospel. You lead them to Christ. And forever, you're taking that person with you to heaven. Do you know people that you've led to the Lord? Have you ever thought about that? That's your greatest possession. I think back of every person. Do you remember the guy I told you about with all the piercings and the thing in his tongue that his eyes were turning orange? That was the color of May's notebook there. Do you remember that moment I told you that story? Did you know I'm taking Daniel with me to heaven? I told him about Christ. When we get to heaven, Daniel's going to come up, put your hand up, give me a high five. He's going to go, hey, haven't seen you for a long time. Do you remember when you scared me to death with that gospel tract at Starbucks? They'll say, I'll never forget it. Do you know that you get the privilege of taking people with you to heaven? Are you thinking about that? Do you pray about that? Do you have a list of people you're praying for in your family, back home, that you know aren't Christians yet? Relatives, neighbors, people you went to school with, people you see when you're out on, you know, evangelism. Are you praying for them? See, right in the midst of this thing, God sent David help. You know what he sent him? He sent one of the eternal benefits of David's, the byproduct of his life. He's taken people with him to heaven. Ittai was born in Gath. He would have gone to hell because he was an idol-worshipping Philistine. And David came into his life. David showed the Lord to him. And Ittai wanted to follow the Lord. Wow. Boy, that's encouraging. Well, it doesn't stop there. When David was at his weakest point, he waits for God to provide. Look at verse 25. And the king said to Zadok, carry the ark of God back to the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back, and he will bring it to me, both it and his dwelling place. You know what he said? I'm not going to take matters into my own hands. I'm not going to take that ark like some magic charm and, you know, like a superhero action movie, you know, Thor's hammer. I'm going to blast all the enemies that are coming after me like Absalom is. No, I'm going to wait for God to provide. Number three, look at verse 30. So David went up, see, right here, he crossed the Kidron, he climbs the steep incline of the Mount of Olives. And it says he went up, he had his head covered, he was barefoot, the people also covered their head and went up, weeping as they went. Verse 32, now it happened when David came to the top of the mountain, he offered his worship to God. Wow. Proskuneo, that's the word for worship, speaks of getting down on your face, down close to the ground, hands and knees are flat, and looking up like this. Actually, it speaks of even kissing. It's kind of like when a subject comes before a king, they get as low as possible and they go, you know, you're to be honored. That's exactly what David did up there. And what he said, he wrote down. That's what the third psalm is. It's amazing. At his lowest moment of his life, David bows and offers a psalm of praise to God. Wow. You know what that tells us? God's servants can continue in worship even when life is tough, life is difficult. It looks almost impossible to go on. Do you remember the story I told you about John Bunyan? Did I tell you that, or the upstairs students? That John Bunyan in jail, that his wife brought him milk every day? I think I used this as the milk bottle. Joella's, didn't I go like this and say that the cork and the milk bottle? Do any of you remember that story? John Bunyan was in prison for like 16 years. And every day his wife walked 3 miles and brought him a milk bottle with a cork in it. And he took that with a little knife and shaved off little strips of the cork and wrote the best-selling book in the world next to the Bible. Wow. You know what that means? Even in the lowest moments of life, we can offer worship to the Lord. There's another missionary besides this one. His name was Adoniram Judson. He went to Myanmar, Burma. It's over there, you know, just across the water from you guys in Myanmar. Very pagan place. In fact, it's got the longest war going on in the world. There's a war that's been going on there almost 70 years. Non-stop battle in that country. A civil war between the two halves of it. It also is the one country in the world that has the highest drug use of the world. The highest per capita use of heroin. The highly addictive drug heroin. It's grown there in Myanmar. The poppies, where they harvest the heroin. And 95% of all men over the age of 13 are addicts. No country in the world is like that. You ever think about how dark that place is? That's where Adoniram Judson went. And that was 300 years ago he went there. He went to the darkest spot on earth, is what he called it. Because they worship demons there. And they're addicted to opium there. And they murder each other. They're just like animals, is what he described them as. And you know what? He went there. And do you know what the king of Myanmar, of Siam, did to him? They put him in jail. And he translated the Bible. He kept his papers, his manuscripts, in his pillow of his jail cell. And for years, he was in jail, translating the Bible. And now, the southern half of the nation is filled with believers, and the northern half is filled with all those drug addicts and people killing each other. And he ministered down there in the south and translated the scriptures while he was in jail. See, most of us, if we have a sore throat, or if we stub our toe, or our back hurts, we go, oh, I can't go on open air. I can't go witnessing. My back hurts. You know, my throat hurts. I can't talk. You ever think? David is running for his life. And he writes this psalm. Okay. We'll never get through these unless someone goes faster. Me. When David was in his least control of his circumstance, he entrusts his situation to the Lord. Look what it says in verse 31. That's right between 30 and 32 up there. And someone told David, Ahithophel is coming, is among the conspirators of Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Ahithophel. Ahithophel. That's Bathsheba's grandpa. Bathsheba's grandpa began to hate David because David committed adultery with his granddaughter and David killed his grandson, Uriah. And so Ahithophel, the wisest person in the land, went against David. What did David do? He entrusted his situation to the Lord. He said, I pray. See, David could have worried and meditated on the problem that the smartest planner of everything, who was Ahithophel, he is going to defeat me. Or he could trust God's promises. And that's what he did. When you pray, you commit things to the Lord. You say, Lord, I can't do this on my own. I'm giving it to you. He prayed. That's not all he does. Number five. When David was attacked, he realized that God allowed his adversaries for his own purpose. Keep going from chapter 15 to chapter 16, and let me read to you what happens starting in verse 9. The reference up there, instead of 15, 30, 32, should be 16, 9 to 11. Look what happens in 16, 9. This guy, his name is Shimei. Starting in verse 5, David is walking like this, head covered, crying, barefooted like this. And all of a sudden he hears this sound, and it's someone screaming and yelling and everything. So David, you know, knows trouble is coming, and he looks up from under his towel on his head with tears running down his face. And here comes this wild-eyed maniac with a handful of rocks, and he's throwing rocks at David and spitting and throwing dirt at him and cursing him. And David is surrounded by this column of special forces. If you've ever read about David's mighty men, these guys would jump into a pit with a lion and kill the lion. One of them ran into a field with 300 soldiers, took the spear out of one of the soldiers' hands, and killed all 300 of them. I mean, these guys are like, they're better than the Avengers. These are real people. And that was just... two of them, all 30 of them, were unbelievably bold, fierce fighters that were just, I mean, they were just really amazing. They're all standing around David, guarding him. David's in the middle, crying, barefooted, no sword.
And here comes this little weasel guy with a handful of stones, throwing them at David, spitting, throwing dust, cursing him. And look at verse 9. And Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please let me go over and look at what he says." Verse 9. What does the last part say? Yeah. Chop or take off his head. What Hebrew is literally, "let me lift his head." What he meant is, "I'm going to take my sword, go, and before his head drops to the ground, I'm going to put it on the end of my sword, I'm going to lift it up." And say, that's what happens to anybody that spits at the king and throws a rock at him. And what does David say? "Go get him. You know, get him twice, once for me." No. The king said, "What have I to do with you, sons of Zeruiah? Let him curse. Because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who then shall say, why have you done this?" Wow, verse 11. And David said to Abishai and all his servants, "See how my own son, who came from my own body, is chasing me to this point." He said, if all that happened, let him alone, verse 11. "Let him curse, for the Lord has ordered him." David entrusted his afflictions to the Lord. Did you know that God raises up adversaries? Do you have anybody who's doing this to you? Spitting, cursing, throwing stuff at you. You know, they say mean things about you. They lie about you. They make your friends not like you. They betray you. Did you know that God allows that to happen? David said it. God sends adversaries to see what's in our heart. That's why. So that what's in us. He realized God allows adversaries for his own purposes. Every time when you read the Bible that an adversary is raised up, read wider than that verse and you'll find God raised up the adversary every time in the Bible. God raises up adversaries so he can find out what's in our heart. Do you know who the greatest adversary is? Satan. Satan. That's what his name means. Satan in Hebrew means adversary. God allows Satan to tempt David to look at Bathsheba so God could know what David was going to do. Was he going to... Do you remember my story about my son? Did I tell you that story? That I kicked? And what did he do? That's what God wants us to do. An adversary comes into your life. An enemy comes. Satan resists you. Or the authorities resist you. Or your good friend stops being your good friend. It's like God kicks your world. And he wants you to look up at him and go like this. See, that's... Everything is being orchestrated by God in David's life for us to learn from. Verse 12 of chapter 16, 2 Samuel 16, verse 12. "It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction, that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day." David fled to the Lord for hope. David says, "Lord, you're the only one that can help me." Even when David's situation looked hopeful, God was managing everything. Now we get to chapter 17. And the Lord thwarts in 17:14. That's the next one. Look at that. I'll change it for you. This should be 17:14. Don't you wish everything in life was as easy as correcting something on a slide? There you go. That's the correct reference for that slide. God was managing everything, and at just the right moment... Oh, this one's going to be harder. This one should be 2 Samuel 17... 27 to 29. There we go. Boom. There we go. Look what it says in verse 27 of 2 Samuel 17. "Now it happened when David came to Mahanaim that Shobi the son of Nahash from Rabbah, the people of Ammon, Machir the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillah the Gileadite from Rogalim." What a mouthful of names that is. "Brought," verse 28 of chapter 17, "brought..." Remember I told you they're going out into the wilderness? Remember that? They're going to sleep on the ground. They trudge from up there to right here. That's taken two chapters. And look what happens. Verse 28. They brought beds, basins, earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seeds. You know what that means? They came with an order from Pizza Hut. They came from, how do you say it, Jollibee, right? Something for everybody, okay? Everything you like. And honey, verse 29, and curds and cheese for the herd. So they also got some Cold Stone Creamery, you know, little ice cream there. For David and the people who were with him to eat, and they said, the people are hungry, weary, and thirsty. At just the exact moment God planned, all of David's needs are met. Okay, what's the lesson? When our dreams turn to ashes, what were David's dreams? David's dreams were that his son would sit on the throne after him. His son is coming to kill him. David's dream was that he would build the temple for the Lord, and the Lord said, no, you can't build it. David's dreams were that he would have family time, and Absalom comes to kill his family, and he's on the run. Everything, his dreams turn to ashes. So what does David do? And let's go back to Psalm 3, and we have 7 minutes to finish. So go back to Psalm 3, and we're going to examine. Remember I told you there are three sermons, three-point sermon in this? God's servants can continue to worship. When David had this horrible event come to him, he turns it into a worship time. Worship always. Now, for a minute, stop and think about sleep. Some of you are thinking about it a bit too much. It's time for you to wake up. Do you know what I used to do? When I was a professor, I was a seminary professor before I was a missionary, and I used to teach at the Master's Seminary with Dr. John MacArthur. And when I taught at the seminary, many of the men in the seminary were married, had children. They had a full-time job in Los Angeles, plus they were going to seminary. And the only way they could go to seminary was they worked all night. They worked the night shift. They would go into work like at 5 or 6 at night and work, or they'd go into work at 9 at night and work all night until class. And so I would be teaching along, and all over the room, there'd be 50 guys in my class. I would teach theology 3 or soteriology or eschatology or ecclesiology or whatever I was teaching. And a guy would fall asleep right in the middle of class. I mean, out cold. This is what I taught my class to do. Shows you how bad I was. The Lord has worked on me a lot. I had taught the class, if the person next to you falls asleep, you're supposed to lightly bump him and say, Pauline, he asked you to close in prayer. And they all loved it. And so everyone would sit in class and wait for the person next to him to fall asleep, and they'd go, Theody, he asked you to close in prayer. And here I would be up in front teaching, and all of a sudden one of the men would stand up and say, Lord, we're so thankful for our professor who's been teaching us. And everyone would start laughing. And they'd go, I fell asleep, didn't I? Usually only once did this happen, and they stayed awake the rest of the semester. You only had to have that happen once. But let's not do that. Let's think about sleep. Do you know what sleep is? Think about it. Sleep means your work must stop, your day must end, and that your strength has run out. Did you know God designed sleep to show us we're weak? Also that we're defenseless. Now, I don't want to tell you this too much, but when you're over there in your bed asleep, you are completely helpless. Someone can sneak up and get you, and you don't even hear them coming. You're unconscious. When we're sleeping, we're absolutely helplessly dependent on the person that stays awake, whose name is, in the Bible, that he who watches over you never slumbers or sleeps. Who said that about themselves? The Lord. That's one of his attributes. He said, you have to sleep. And I never will sleep because I'm going to watch over you when you're weak, helpless, defenseless. Did you know every time we go to sleep, it should remind us that God is not, and that we're helpless. I can't stay alive on my own. I have to drink water. I have to eat the incredible good food you guys are cooking over there in the kitchen. I have to sleep at night to get strengthened to start another day. God designed sleep to show us that. And so, David writes a psalm about sleep. Look at the third psalm. It says in the third psalm, in verse 5, I lay down and slept. Did you know that's the only reference to sleeping that's talking about a theology of sleep in the whole Bible? And what it's saying is that we're supposed to trust God no matter what. That's the context. The third psalm was written right there on top of the Mount of Olives when an enemy army was coming. David was on the run. He was being driven out of town. He had the enemy coming for him. He's headed out into the wilderness. He has nothing, but he's barefooted. And he's got enemies coming, most pointedly, Shimei throwing rocks at him right at the moment. And David is headed out there to lay down on the ground and sleep. And you have to trust God no matter what happens. Okay, here are the three messages that are in this psalm. Like David, we'll always face battlefields. Look at verses 1 and 2. O Lord, how they have increased to trouble me. Many rise up against me. Many are those who say of me, there's no help for him in God. Pause, Selah. We're all going to face battles. Now, none of you have a son named Absalom, and none of you live in the city of David, and none of you are going to stand on top of the Mount of Olives barefooted. Unless you remember this and go on the Word of Life trip and do that, but probably not. But we're all going to have battlefields the rest of our life. Number two, we all get to make choices. Look at the next verses. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me. The glory, the one who lifts up my head. Did you catch that? Lifts up my head. What was David doing? He was like this. It actually says he was looking down and crying. Did you know my kids? I would give them a bicycle for Christmas, and they would go riding their bicycle and messing around, doing tricks, and they'd crash their bicycle and bend it, and it wouldn't work, and they'd come to me like this. I ruined my bicycle. And they'd come up to me like this, looking down, and you know what I would always do? I'd put my hand under their chin and I'd lift it up. That's what you... Look at verse 3. You are the shield for me, the one who lifts up my head. David's crying. He said, I messed up life. I messed up my family. I messed up your name. And God said, hey, I have... Your sins are gone, Nathan told him. You will not die. They're put on Christ. He lifted up his head. He said, I'm a shield about you. Wow. By the way, verse 5, we all need sleep. Have you ever thought about why we sleep as humans? Have you considered that all of us will probably spend a third of our life sleeping? Some of you a little bit more. You're sleeping in class, so you're going beyond your third at night. Sleep is not an accident. God is the designer and promoter of sleep. Why? Because we are supposed to trust him to take care of us. Like David, we all have problems. And the lessons are, when David is chased and hunted in verse 5, he lay down and slept, and he awoke because the Lord sustained him. I will not be afraid. That's how we're supposed to live.